And now perhaps you have the impression that experiences that you have could possibly be encoded deep within your genes and be passed on to your offspring. Well, there's no evidence for that. There's all kinds of impressions we have about how DNA works, but the science of it, particularly as it regards environmental factors, is just becoming clear. And Michael Meany joins us now. He's the co-director of the Sackler Program for Epigenetics and Psychobiology at McGill University in Montreal, and he's the lead author of an extraordinary paper that was published this week in Nature, Neuroscience. It's an article on the biological effects of child abuse detected inside our genetic structure. Michael Meany, first of all, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
And I just want to sketch out very, very briefly, you looked at child abuse as an event because, I mean, it certainly doesn't take a scientist to know that that is a blunt trauma to all aspects of child development. But did you choose child abuse because you thought it would be more likely to show up genetically, or that you had some prior evidence going in that it was likely to code genetically in people's cells?
It's the latter in large measure. I mean, as you point out, it's going to come as no surprise to people who study child development to know that parental care can have long-term influences, and in part, those influences are exerted over the way we respond to stress. So what we tried to do is to simply ask the question, how does that happen? How is it that an event that occurs early in life can have such pervasive and long-term effects? So we developed a model with rats, and surprisingly as it may sound, these effects recapitulate themselves rather nicely in the rat. So simply put, the quality of maternal care in the rat, the way the mother interacts with her pup, predicts the way the offspring respond to stress in adulthood. And so we then had the basis by which we could start to understand how that occurred, and simply put, the mother's care alters the activity of genes in the brain that regulate the stress response. We took it one step further and asked, how could that happen? How does maternal care, an essentially social event, modulate the activity of genes over potentially over the lifespan? And what we found when we looked at the DNA was that the DNA carried particular marks dependent on the quality of maternal care. Now, these marks are what we call epigenetic marks. We're all familiar with the genetic code. It's a nucleotide sequence. It's really the bread and butter, if you will, of the gene. But over the course of development, the gene accumulates these molecular marks, which are simply molecules that are laid down on the DNA. And the mother's behavior actually influences this process. And the molecules actually determine the level of activity of that region of the DNA.
Well, let's pull two things out. Let's just pull two things out there. One, this epigenetic world that I want to talk to about in a moment is theoretically a domain which possibly encodes all kinds of very, very complex behaviors, including some that occur in the environment. And secondly, you observed the behavior in rats apparently being passed on, and you went to look for it, and this is what you found. Is that a fair assessment of how the study worked?
Yeah, I think I would, just to back up to your first question, the epigenetics are really just exactly as you point out in your introduction. They are, if you will, almost an environmental trace that's left on the DNA itself in the form of these molecular marks that are literally attached onto the DNA. So it is, in a way, a trace of early developmental history that persists into adulthood and can alter the activity of the genome.
Now, is this a kind of an archive as it functions in the cells, or is it actually a lever that could possibly be manipulated whereby therapies could be designed to mitigate the effects of child abuse or reverse the effects of child abuse?
Well, I think you can think of them as both. I mean, essentially what we were trying to do in the human study, for example, is to create some kind of an analog by which we could ask whether the same processes are occurring in humans. To go back to your first point, we actually looked at abuse because it's something we can document very clearly when you're working with an adult organism. So as you can imagine, if you're working in this particular case, we're actually studying the brains of individuals who have completed suicide or have died of accidental circumstances, almost invariably car accidents. And this is what refers to the paper, the current paper. the abuse is something that can be documented very clearly. And so we look at that both in terms of, as you suspected, the fact that it is traumatic and likely to leave such an imprint, and then second, because it can be documented historically, and so you can actually verify its presence or absence in these individuals.
And the mechanism in rats is almost precisely duplicated in humans based on your initial results?
I think based on the initial results, the best way to put it is the human data, that is that these traces are derivable from the history of abuse, is consistent with what we've seen in the rat. Of course, in the rat, we can get in there and see exactly how these traces are being laid down. But at least within simply being able to document the relationship is actually a fairly reasonable advance.
Well, it's an extraordinarily exciting advance. Finally, parents out there are going to hear what you say and assume that there's a kind of a deterministic quality here, that a victim of child abuse, if it affects their genes, they're permanently damaged. What would you say to parents who are asking question?
I'm glad you brought it back to that, because that's a critical point. The beauty of these epigenetic marks is that they are potentially reversible. And they, at least the types of epigenetic marks that we're looking at, are not necessarily going to be transmitted from parent to offspring. So you needn't be sitting around there saying, look, I've been damaged, ergo my children will be damaged regardless of how good a parent I am. That's not right. These epigenetic marks, the kind of that we're speaking of and where they're located, are pretty much wiped clean in the next generation. And that, on the other hand, what that really sets us up for, as any developmentalist will caution you, is that we know that individuals who were abused as a child are very likely to be compromised in their own parental care. And so what it suggests then is that the level of intervention is that you definitely want to be targeting the parental care of these high-risk individuals, and particularly, of course, caring for their mental health.
Intervention is possible. Well, you know, we don't have time for the second point, unfortunately, but it's a fabulously interesting breakthrough and story. And the details are in this week's Nature Neuroscience. Michael Meany is co-director of the Sackler Program for Epigenetics and Psychobiology at McGill University. Wow. Thanks so much for being with us, Michael.
My pleasure. Good morning to you all.
Study is all about the effects of child abuse in genes. And now quick headlines from Femi, okay?
Hello there. The time is 29 minutes past the hour.